Welcome to the I'm Still Here podcast. I'm your host, Heather Jose. In 1998, at the age of 26, I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. It changed everything for us, but I'm still here. And we're here to talk to you about life with metastatic disease. We know it's not easy. We know that there are challenges that never get talked about, but we're here to walk with you through them, to show you some hope, some inspiration, and to help you make a plan so that you can join me in saying, I'm still here.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Feels like it's been a minute since we've been in this seat.
I know.
We've been kind of flying by the seat of our pants a little bit. We were able to enjoy a really nice vacation, though. So Thanks for your patience. And if you're new to cancer, it's just kind of a reminder that you might be able to get back to a more normal life, I think. And that's what I thought we would talk about today. Because when I get emails or messages from people, I think a lot of times the theme is similar in just kind of thank you for showing me that it is possible. But also, I just want you to know, like, I've dealt with all the same things that I think you're thinking about. It's so scary, to find out that your world's been tipped upside down, right?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, we took vacations even during cancer treatment or shortly after. We did that, but it is different the farther you get away from treatment.
Yeah.
Or that intense treatment, obviously, yeah, that I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
It is different in the not everything relates to it, even with a vacation.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, it's never more than 30 seconds away from every thought type of thing. That is different.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think that's probably the biggest thing, is literally that everything becomes about cancer when you're first diagnosed. And it's all-consuming, and it's horrible. Like, somebody can say something about going somewhere, and you think, will I ever be able to do that again? Right. Or just every conversation, you know, groceries, all this kind of stuff. It doesn't matter what it is, and I think that's super normal for the beginning, but I think the goal is for it to be able to become more of a secondary type of thing,
yes,
right?
Right.
So I actually was thinking about, we were gone for a little over a week. I think there might have been some days in there that I didn't think about cancer. And I honestly will say, I thought there would never be a day that I wouldn't think about cancer.
Hmm.
I mean, there's so many reminders of it just that I carry and everything else. So, or that I was able to think about it in a, you know, in a positive way, in that we were at a beach and they had a drink on special that was going to their cancer fund or whatever. And I was like, yep, I'll take one of those, you know, but
yeah,
able to paint it a little more positively, I guess, but.
So you can get there.
You can get there, but I know how hard it is. And that's what I thought I'd talk about a little bit today. So, like, I think one of my big things is, you know, when those thoughts are coming in so fast, is like, will I ever be able to relate to people again? I think it's just such a challenge when the world keeps going on. And we've talked about this many times, too, about how, you know, when something big changes in your life, it just feels like the world is flying by, like they're not even noticing what happened to you.
Yep.
And, you know, there's so many things out there that's like, you don't know what's going on in somebody else's life. Just be kind. It's so true, right? But I think it also really affects, like, your close relationships with these people that maybe that's your mom friend, or that's your, you know, you work together, or your colleagues. Every kind of conversation is impacted at the beginning, and it does feel very isolating.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything just keeps going. Everything goes full speed ahead, and you just hit the brakes and stop. And
yeah,
wonder why everything is going by full speed.
Yeah.
You know, and that's anything that's traumatic that's happened, right, in your life, not just cancer. But with this one, It is. And then all of those reminders that.
Yeah. It's just like literally every conversation has a reminder because you're considering what's going to happen to you at all times. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's sad too, that it changes kind of these relationships that you have, depended on. And for some people, hopefully you'll be able to talk about the hard things or find your way through navigating those initial conversations, and then it'll settle into something else. Mm-hmm. But for some people, it won't. For some people, I'm just going to say, like, you're going to lose relationships. And that's, I guess it's okay. It's necessary in some points, especially if you feel like it's a relationship that every time you walk away from a conversation, it's draining you. Then you need to, right?
Yeah. That's what, the whole importance of the mental side, that's going to be doing nothing but taking away from that, being positive on the mental side.
Yeah. So I think along with, this first, will I ever be able to relate to people again? I mean, the other most prominent question for me was, am I dying? Mm-hmm. Like, am I dying? And
quickly.
Quickly.
We're all yes. dying.
I know, but it just... I mean, especially when you're diagnosed, I was diagnosed at 26, and I guess I shouldn't say especially then, because I think if I were diagnosed at 51, I would still be like, what?
No doubt.
I have so much life to live.
Completely changed our opinions on that, obviously, as we've gotten older, because right. you do think of,
they've lived a
great life. I don't know if I'll ever feel that way.
Yeah.
Maybe I will.
I don't know. I've always kind of also wrestled with, like, what's a good age to... to leave this earth. Oh, okay. but the whole am I dying thing is just so, it's not something that we've, considered before. And what does that mean? And I think for me, I wrestled a lot with, I still feel really pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like on some days I'd be like, what if this is a cruel joke? Like, what if we're doing all of this stuff? You know what I mean? It just, because... one day I was normal, raising a family, young mom, young career, blah, blah, blah. And the next day I had stage 4 breast cancer. Like,
poof,
yeah. And I think, I guess I don't have an answer to that. Am I dying? I could never resolve it other than to say, well, not today. So, mm-hmm. How do I build a life that helps me move forward?
And that was a gradual process.
Yes.
So if you are in the fire here, and don't think that she just made that decision and it happened.
Oh, no.
That was years and years of going, well, I am still here today. It wasn't an overnight thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's something, the mental side and what you're putting in your brain every day and what you are surrounding yourself with, which goes into the I don't want to just say being positive mentally, because that's not what I'm talking about. But that strong mental drive, goes hand in hand with that. It just becomes a practice and it becomes you after a while.
Yeah, and I think too for that, when I kind of could say, am I dying? And then not today. And then the next thought was maybe, okay, so what can I do with today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a lot of things. Some days it's, how can I make myself healthier? How can I do that kind of stuff? How can I enjoy today? How can I take something from today rather than living in this fear of death? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another question, is this going to decimate us financially? Like, mm-hmm. will we be broke? Is there help? What is this going to do? Can we survive financially?
Yeah, luckily in our case, we had insurance, but we had only ever really used the insurance to have a baby, which in our case, things were just taken care of. We weren't knee deep and didn't really know what insurance was or how it worked.
You're talking medical insurance.
Yeah.
I also had life insurance prior, which...
But I think the medical side is what destroys people when they don't have insurance or have crappy insurance and they end up coming out of this with $1 million in debt.
Yeah.
That happens to people.
I know.
We were lucky enough to have very good insurance, but still didn't know how to maneuver through that when you're talking about a big, and our insurance company was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Literally took the reins on it and just so personal in the help. I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
The help that they gave us early on and truly kind of made us think at least like, hey, we got this.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. You do what you need to do. We got this. Don't worry about anything. And yeah, it was phenomenal.
The other thing I would say,
I know that's unusual.
Yes. The other thing with that is, like, I applied for Social Security disability mm-hmm. right away. I don't know how many people do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say you absolutely have the right to apply for that mm-hmm. and to fight for it. It is sad, in my opinion, that it takes, there's a 6-month waiting period, which again will decimate people in that time. I mean, the loss of an income for 6 months is, most of us can't do that, especially again, when we're young or when we've had other instances, right? But I feel like it's important for people to realize that you don't have to be on your deathbed to apply for benefits and to apply for help. And in fact, I would really encourage people to do that while they're able to and maybe able to make a difference, right? Mm-hmm. So I was approved for disability. And that was also helpful. It helped us mm-hmm. get through for many years.
Yeah, I was on a beginning teacher salary, and this was 30 years ago, beginning teacher salary. And it wasn't much money. And yeah,
right. No. I mean, we had, like, a year prior to that, you were just getting hired. Like, the one making the money. So, like, yeah, it was a huge switch. But I guess with that, I feel like, especially in America, I know people from all over watch this, and can't speak to your systems. But I feel like disability has a bad rap because people abuse it. I don't care. Let people abuse it. That's for them to deal with. It doesn't mean you shouldn't apply.
Remind yourself that you're paying into that.
Yes, and also just because you may be physically able to drag yourself to work every day does not mean it's the best thing for you.
Yeah.
So
it does not equate to you being able to truly
take care of yourself
in these elements that we've talked about that are needed
yes.
in order to give yourself the best shot at this.
Yes.
Because that's all we know is giving the best shot.
Right. Yeah. So there's my little soapbox for that. Yeah.
No, you're right.
But
there is, you know, we talk about life insurance. We kind of got talked into that at a very young age, thank goodness, you know, because there's no way you could get life insurance now.
No.
And many of you probably know that if you're a metastatic cancer patient, you're not getting life insurance. So we were lucky enough to get into that prior to it and converted it over to a whole life policy.
Our company paid the premiums on it.
Paid the premiums on it during...
While I was on disability.
While you were on disability, right. So, just, yeah. Lucky there.
One more thing to say about disability is, like, you can go off it. I've been off it for years.
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean that you're getting on disability and you're going to stay on it until you die.
No, and we've considered, even you at times, going back on it.
Yes.
You know, and doing it because of your circumstances or situations. The fact is, if you're a metastatic cancer, you're a metastatic cancer patient for life.
Right.
And all of you know that
right.
you know, and that doesn't change. It may change how you feel. You may feel completely different as far as, like we just talked about,
right.
far enough away from that intensive. But nothing's changed from a year after you were diagnosed to now.
No, I'm still on treatment.
Nothing
all of that
has
right.
changed.
Right.
I mean, so.
Yeah, the other thing I will say with that is there's sometimes... it pops up that people talk about, like, metastatic breast cancer being a chronic disease. That scares me when people start saying that, because it does change things like disability benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And
it does.
It is not the same as a chronic disease. There's a reason it is in the category it is. And until the numbers start changing dramatically in terms of... you know, people living much longer and all that kind of stuff, I feel like it's really important for us to continue to fight for that. So it does not mean that Yeah, it's just important. I think the words matter, and in this case, it really does matter. Chronic versus terminal. Terminal does not have to mean tomorrow.
Exactly.
So, all right. Woo!
And by far, metastatic cancer is still terminal.
It is. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, we are just, hoping for as many good years as possible with that. So, all right. Another question that came up, or that I would think about it and still think about, is like, can I still love my body? Like, my body, and will my partner still love my body? Right? That was a shake of the head to those of you who are listening via podcast. Breast cancer has a huge impact on body image. And I think that is true whether or not you have surgeries. You know, I feel like I've had every surgery, pretty much, and it has affected my body image and how I feel about it. And even even now, just to recap, I had a double mastectomy initially, and I was flat for, I don't know, maybe 5 years or so. And then I had a reconstructive surgery. And in the last, again, maybe 2, 3, 4 years, maybe 5, I don't know, I had a different reconstruction. Like, I had it revamped, I guess would be. It's never, my breasts don't look like breasts anymore to me. do you want to speak to that at all?
I don't think I should, because that's not the topic here. Yeah. The topic is how you feel about your body, and you interpret that, and how you, how it feels to you. That's what matters here.
Yeah.
I think you know my feelings on this, and I love your body. It doesn't really make a difference to me, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but it doesn't really matter. Yeah. It matters how you feel.
I think it's important for partners to be able to convey that, and I will say one of the most impactful body image things was in Jen Hatmaker's last book. She talks about her body and loving her body and loving it for what it's done for her and how it's carried her through the years. And that, I think, has helped me the most to be able to go, thank you. Like, you have kept me alive through some really intense stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have put you through a lot, like in terms of treatments and different things like that. And you still come back for more, right? Like,
people don't know about your life right now, but you're very active,
mm-hmm.
both physically and just socially. You're 100 miles an hour a lot of times in work. And all of that stuff, you go on as if nothing has happened to your body.
Yeah.
I would say your life would be very equivalent with or without cancer right now if we could, compare that. I don't think a lot of things would change.
Yeah.
There are some things we don't. We don't ski. Right. We don't jump out of airplanes. We don't do those kind of things just out of...
But we jump off of boats on the second.
Yeah, but just out of sense of, we better not because of we your bone history.
Right.
That's it. That is it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think...
But going back to image, kind of got off there.
Yeah, image has been an issue for me. But I will say, too, I also find that I have really realized that when I am physically active, mostly that's probably the biggest thing. When I'm physically active, I feel better about my body. 100%. It doesn't even matter if, the scale is changing or if things like that. If I am, and by physically active, walking, lifting a little, just moving around and getting all that stuff, it does help my body image.
I think that's 100% true for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a human on the face of the earth that that's not true for.
Yeah.
But, you know, with us, by the way, I completely agree with everything you just said, and I haven't had cancer.
Yeah.
So, I think that carries through for everybody. We feel better when we're active.
Yeah.
And what does that play into? Well, it plays into the mental side of how we're feeling about ourselves. Yeah. That's all mental. That's right. Nothing to do with our actual body. Right. It's just our opinion of our body.
Yeah.
And that's all mental. And we can change that one way or the other. And we will ebb and flow throughout life probably about our feelings about it.
Yeah.
And I just say, well, do something about it.
Yeah.
Get off your ass.
Well, but also, I mean, there are things you can do. I mean, body image wise too. Like this took me years to figure out, and partly it's just come along more in the last few years, whatever. But when I had chemotherapy in 1999, I lost all my hair, right? But my eyebrows, I have eyebrows, but they were really light and I have dark hair, right? So like probably I think it's been 5 or 6 years ago, I had my eyebrows microbladed. Even that just was like a huge, it just helps me feel better about myself. You know what I mean? It's one of those things that I'm just like, I look the same now if I'm in the water, out of the water, that kind of stuff. And it's like, there are things that we can do that are helpful, I guess, that make us feel a little better about ourselves. But I think, I do believe strongly in, you know, being nice to your body, like in terms of I'm not going to beat it up. I'm not going to talk badly about it. I might be disappointed at times, but I'm not going to, you know, so is it perfect for me? Do I, every time I look at my breasts go, oh, that could be, you know, or I see the lines or whatever, it is what it is, but you know, so.
Yeah. And the other part is, and I don't even know if I should say this or not, but I'm gonna, it doesn't matter. I don't even remember what your breasts
looked like. I know. Well, that's the other thing for us, right? Is that we've been at this for so long. We've known each other longer with cancer than we only knew each other for a couple of years without cancer.
Yeah.
We are so far on the other side of this that those memories are something that I just go, you know?
But this is my normal.
Yeah.
You are my normal.
Yeah.
You are, you know what I mean? So it, I never look at you or do that and oh, look at the, like you said, a line or something.
No idea.
Just, this is my normal.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So, let's talk the other thing with that closely, I think, interacts with that is intimacy. You know, is intimacy ever going to be the same? Is intimacy possible? I think because it's breast cancer and it's a female organ, blah, 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 sensual, sexual, all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of tie-ins to intimacy and,
how our body feels pleasure.
Yeah. And also just kind of like here's this thing that brought me a lot of pleasure. And now I feel like it's brought me a lot of difficulty, right? Like a lot of, like, how can the cancer
emptiness.
Was empty. I mean, it's taken away so much from me, right? So breasts are so sexualized and it does feel like your body deceived you, I guess, in that way, you know? And I think, again, everybody's intimacy journey is different, but I think honestly, the thing that has helped our intimacy the most has been me being able to get past my issues. And I'm not saying that there are, being open to the fact that we could have a good sex life, we could feel intimate, this normal, I guess. There are barriers, right, to intimacy, and a lot of them, I just feel like what gets talked about a lot of times in the breast cancer world is, you know, all of these problems. And I'm not saying there aren't problems. There are. And I let them be the stopping point for a long time, I think. But then I was like, okay, how do we work through them? Mm-hmm. You know, that's
because we didn't know anything.
Because we didn't know anything, honestly. And again, it's been 25 years.
Yeah.
There was no talk of this when we were first at it. It was very much just, hey, we're gonna try to kill some cancer.
Well, yeah, and the big thing, obviously, sex or intimacy has so much to do with hormones, and hormones drive that. Our feelings, they drive our mental state, and when those are negated in your body.
When we're trying to take every one of them out.
That's what I'm saying is when those are, you know, just taken out of the equation and you're forced into menopause at age 26, there are a lot of roadblocks or curveballs or however you want to say that.
Yeah.
They're just in place and there's no denying it. And there was definitely no, okay, here's how you handle this.
Right.
And you know, there was none of that. We tried early on, maybe. We I don't know. Going back to hormones, I think there was some hormone
things. We tried some testosterone things. Yeah.
Absolutely did nothing.
Did nothing.
But I look back now, you know, from now, mm-hmm. It really wasn't about adding a hormone or subtracting mm-hmm. this. Or it mm-hmm. wasn't that. It was about coming back to this mental state.
It was about me being able to be comfortable 100%. In my body. And
which then drove those hormones or drove that intimacy, yes, wanting yes. that. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And again, I don't remember. I do sometimes go, I don't remember what it was like before cancer. I don't remember it really so much. I wish, again, with that kind of stuff, we kind of go like, we were still just young and enjoying being together, whatever. We didn't really think that it was going to end in the way that it did. And so I don't feel like I have a good recall of that. But over the years of like accepting who I am, accepting my body, accepting that my body is what it is and that I feel like I can kind of turn myself on a little bit more. I feel like I can do some things that I didn't think would ever be possible. And again, some of that.
So how'd you do that?
I think it's.
Because that's what they're wondering.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's all of those. I think it's us, our relationship together, working hard on what feels okay to me and what doesn't feel okay to me. And what even, and by feels okay, I mean language. I mean touch. I mean warning or forewarning or all of those things. It's all of it, right? And also I think part of it is me feeling like, okay, I have some control and there are some things that can help. And, you know, and so, you know.
Well, I think the big change, I don't know when it happened. It's been a while now. The big change was you seeking pleasure.
Yeah.
Versus just doing this act.
I agree.
To make me happy or to satisfy me.
Yeah.
That was the big change.
Yeah.
And I'm 100% for that. It actually makes it much more pleasurable for me in any intimate situation when that's happening. I don't know if that was a decision or what spurred that or...
Yeah,
I don't know, but that was the big change.
You can't like pull everything apart. But in my life, there's especially in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, probably mostly the last 5 years, there's just been a lot of deconstruction, mm-hmm. which is a big word. And for those of us who grew up with like really strict religious upbringings, it's been a lot of just realizing, yeah, that it's okay for me to feel pleasure and want pleasure and all of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And to not use the breast cancer as an excuse. And don't get me wrong. I am not saying if you are feeling pain, if all of these things are happening, absolutely.
First of all, it is an excuse. Can you find a way around that excuse? Right. It's never to not using breast cancer as an excuse. Well, it is an excuse.
And it's a valid
excuse.
Absolutely.
Can you find the means to maybe circumvent or other ways to then achieve what you're trying to achieve?
Yeah.
I think that's it's never going to go away. You get this forever now.
Yeah.
It's finding the ways around. And I think that's what we have figured out. And we haven't perfected it. That's why we're still practicing. But that's what we're trying to do.
Hey, everyone. I hope you love this episode of I'm Still Here. And I wouldn't want you to miss out on what comes next. So be sure to rate, review, and follow this show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Especially if you found it helpful. We need all the shares, likes, stars, and love we can get. We'd also love to hear from you. Leave your comments and questions, and we'll incorporate them into future episodes. Have a great day.